And as we head into this Thanksgiving weekend, people are coming home again and almost certainly will drive past or have a look at those icons and fixtures of their youth when they were growing up. And one of them is the Holy Angels Convent. And almost certainly a lot of people are going to drive past just to see how it's progressed. The building is changing because it is turning into a community center for creativity. The two people who are the architects are Spiro Triffas, who we know. Hello, Spiro. Welcome.
Thank you, Wendy. Great to be here.
And Joe Lobko, who is from Toronto, who's also working on the project. Hello and welcome.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks.
So you're here this weekend. You're doing the walkthrough. You're having a look to see yourselves, just where the building is.
Right.
And what did you find?
Well, the construction has progressed at a great pace. We are pretty much on time, and Joe is down to get a sense of where things are right now. So I think Joe has been surprised at the quick pace and the great work that's been done by our local trades and all the coordination and fine work that's been done to date.
Joe, when was the last time you had a look?
So I'm guessing it's been 3 or 4 months. And it's, you know, been onwards of a 2-year intensive design and construction process that was parallel. And I can't tell you how excited this last visit was, because from levels 4 down to 1, 4 is just about there. And so you can kind of taste the end is near and the kind of qualities of the space. And they're just what we hoped they would be. Very bright, beautiful, kind of hopeful space, and there's still some work to do as you go down through the building, but you can see that the end is in sight, and it just looks terrific. I couldn't be more pleased with the quality of the work, as Spiro has said. The spirit in which the work is made, you can feel it. The care in which it was put together by the local trades is really, really evident and so appreciated.
Now, this was a 130-year-old building. You took it right back to the studs and started again. But what was the I'm sure architects probably have their own language to discuss philosophically what they're doing. What language did you use with each other when you were trying to describe what it is you wanted to do?
We have two essentially different roles that we play on this project. I'm the architect of record. And I tend to be more concerned with the pragmatic issues of the building permits, the construction technologies that we are accustomed to using locally. How can we be more efficient in terms of how we execute all the different systems that go in here? Joe is providing the inspirational component and the actual design spirit of the building. So we've worked hand in hand to bring this along, and it's been a great collaboration.
Yeah, and it's been terrific, I think, because we really collaborated from the get-go. The collaboration was very early in the sort of birthing of the idea of what would come out. I think a really good example of what Spiro is speaking to, that people that are driving by or, as you say, coming home and wondering what's going on over there at Holy Angels, is if you look at the cladding. So this is a building that transformed over its 130-year history in many ways. An initial piece that got expanded 20 years later, and then over the many years, overclad and cracked and this and that. And so we, as you said, had to peel it back to its bones and put it back together again, but with a new building code that Spiro was very attentive to, and in a spirit that that we were all in collectively trying to aspire to. So the what some might perceive as an unusual approach to the cladding or the aesthetic of the building, the objective there was balancing the 21st century requirements of a building code full of assembly, what we call assembly occupancies, and the honor, you know, in trying to honor the iconic aspect of this loved place in the community's history, but look forward with that transformation.
Okay.
So that was the balancing act we were playing.
I never thought I'd live to see the day I'd ask this question, but what were your options in the cladding, and walk me through it?
Well, the first place we went was where we thought it began. Now, we think that in 1885 we found historic photos of a very symmetrical building with cedar shingles above a stone base. There was the second story was the main story. The ground floor was a lower floor. And it was very beautiful, very symmetrical, very trim. And then it basically morphed and contorted from there. The 20-year later addition was block concrete built on site, not so well in hindsight, cracked early in its life and badly. And we could not let that stand. That was the problem. Fixing cracked block concrete was, you know, with Spiro's assistance and other local expertise, that was not the way to do it. Yeah. So we determined that we wanted it to perform like a 21st century building in all respects. It wasn't simply an aesthetic question. So the below that new face you see is a high performance envelope that's going to really reduce the energy load of the project. And if you think about a not-for-profit putting affordable space in place, we need to keep the operating costs down.
And Joe made certain that, and his team, that we respected the historical qualities of that original design. If you look at the building, it's still historically accurate in terms of its window proportions, it's the type of roof, where the entrances are, except it's quite unique in terms of how we've brought it up to a more contemporary standard while respecting the past.
Now, here's one thing about public buildings, and it doesn't matter if it's a school or if it's a house of worship or even if it's a city hall. Over time, what you need is going to change because the way that people interact changes. The groups change. What accommodations were you able to make for the fact that 10 years down the road, Cape Breton will not be the same as it is right now, the way that building is used probably won't be the same way.
That's a really good question, and that's a question that's so important across not just public buildings, but all the buildings we build now that have multiple use. You know, that's a key question. So you're asking, you know, the jargon. You're partly talking about the bones of the building and its fundamental infrastructure. So we paired it back to its bones. We understood the difference between the South Wing original, the North Wing addition, all the junk in the middle that got added, the tower, etc. When you pared it down, it actually had very different characteristics. And then how do you keep it flexible going forward? And that comes down to circulation systems, basic life safety systems, and then flexible spaces. So it's very purposefully organized. The second level in particular is a very public, very open, basically a meeting space for the community, lots of different room sizes, lots of different ways to meet, informally, more formally. And beyond that, all kinds of things could happen over time. Absolutely. And I think we, Spiro and I, share a kind of spirit where architecture is a backdrop for community life to unfold. So that's exactly how we hope this will happen, that there's within the bones or the structure of the building, respecting that, we're looking for lots of options to unfold in the future.
So the question then is, can the walls come down? Can I get power anywhere I need it if I decide I need it? What if I want to put in a sink? All of those kinds of practical questions that you might want to ask 25 years down the road, would the answers be obvious?
The majority of buildings are adaptable and flexible, and certainly we've incorporated a lot of those elements in this building. One of the unique things you'll see is that most of the systems are exposed, and a lot of care and attention has been paid to making everything accessible. And the important thing is when you're transforming a legacy building, an iconic historic structure like this, is that we recognize that we don't want to waste or throw away something that has a lot of embodied, energy and value. And we try to transform that in the best way we can to take us forward to extend the life for the next 50 years. So it's not this is a very green project from the point of view that we may not have a lot of, solar panels and wind, items on the building, but we've done one of the most sustainable and green things you can do, and that is save a historic edifice and repurpose it for the next 50 years.
Absolutely.
And faith-based buildings, churches, and synagogues almost never shed their meaning. Doesn't matter how long and what you've done with it, it's always the mm-hmm. old. This is a more complex building. There's more going on in there. Mm-hmm. But the meanings that are associated with it, how did you negotiate through that? Because different parts of that building had very different meanings and very profound meanings for people.
Mm-hmm. So a very good question. A couple of immediate thoughts come to mind. One is, from what I understand, so first of all, you do some homework. You do research with people that know. We had great help locally in terms of the place, the history of the place. So as we understand, it was a great place of arts and culture, first and foremost. It was a great place of teaching. And we expect a kind of new version of that to unfold here, exactly. Now, yes, it was also a residence. Yes, it was also a place of Catholic teaching historically, and it was, I think, the only girls' school, I think the rumor is, east of Montreal for how many years or something of that sort. So it was a special place, unusual, I think, in the Maritimes. And so we are going to be respectful and transparent about that history. So while there is a substantial transformation underway and close to being there, I think we're also looking to remember and see seeds of that history as you walk through it. And there'll be some surprises to some people about how we're still working on how we're going to do some of that.
You know, one of the things that we are hearing now is that the patience for they're knocking over heritage buildings is limited in the community. Mm-hmm. People are holding on to things that have meaning. There's a whole subculture of people who are really worried about traffic patterns, and that's their world. And I'm sure there are other groups of people that you have to negotiate with when you're putting this together. Once it's all said and done, though, and I mean, this process is down the road. Is it situated in a way that will allow it to grow and evolve? Or do you anticipate other changes necessary in order for this building and this social space to receive the potential that the community wants it to?
I think the New Dawn was, with their foresight, saw the potential for the site. And I think very early on, the design was commenced with thinking of a campus of the site. It's a large piece of land. It's over 2.5 acres. It is in the middle of a residential neighborhood, and it does bring into question the issues of what is the role of the parking in our downtowns, in our residential neighborhoods? How does active transportation links, how does the issue of having a more vibrant transit system contribute to this building going forward? And we are starting to rethink about how we interact with our buildings and what is the role of the automobile. And, you know, really, do we want to sacrifice more green spaces for more parking spots? So the challenge in transforming and revitalizing in the urban core, particularly in Cape Breton, is we love our cars. And so we have to rethink where we go in the future if we're going to keep revitalizing our downtowns and to make our downtowns more active and pleasant spaces to work, live, and play.
I just would add a quick thing to that I really saw as a great potential when I first came here, and I continue to see, to your point of the future. This, the convent, is one building in a larger site. To me, it was immediately like a community green. This site has great potential. These community institutions, high schools, greens like this, they have great potential for community development, for sure.
And there are other buildings. There's the old church that's
Indeed.
Right across the street.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a renovation going on there. There are meetings taking place now with the Lyceum and what that's going to be. And of course, one can never anticipate how that whole section is going to look once all that. But does that happen as soon as you renovate one building? I mean, just sort of generally, everything starts to fall.
There's a catalytic aspect to this that I've certainly witnessed, and I've had the luck or the privilege of being involved in some radical transformations of old derelict places into wonderful community centers. It's catalytic, potentially, in its impact. And that's the hope here, that in its subtle Cape Breton kind of way, the project can really be a new signal of hope in terms of the future of arts and culture in Cape Breton.
All right. Well, gentlemen, thank you for coming in today.
Thank you very much for having us.
And I've been in conversation with Spiro Trefis and Joe Lobko, both of whom are involved in the Holy Angels development. Spiro is the architect of record, or the prime architect, and Joe did the sort of the philosophical stuff. And is there one big thing that you could not let go of when you made your first walk through that building and you saw something? Was there one thing that you said to yourself, "I'm going to have to find a place for this"?
Yeah, but it's already gone long ago.
Oh, really?
It was actually the kitchen cupboards that the nuns had in the shared kitchen. Yeah. I somehow fell in love with those right off the bat, but then they were gone.
Yeah. Oh, well.
Some problem emerged.
Gentlemen,
so you adjust.
Yeah, so you adjust. Gentlemen, thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thanks so much. Cheers, Wendy.